Chapter 7 is entitled Scheduled Incarnations. It parallels Chapter 3 of Canto 1, where Sutta is describing the forms of the Lord as they appear within this world, which was the question in Chapter 1, one of the questions. Here it's Brahma speaking to Narada, expanding. Some of the same Leela avatar forms of the Lord are described with different features of their Leela. Some additional ones that aren't in Chapter 3 are presented here in Chapter 7 of Canto 2. Some other differences are that when Brahma gets to Krishna, he gives many verses about Krishna. And the one that we're going to discuss this evening is about Kalki avatar. And Prabhupada says some very wonderful things in the purport. Very revealing. So Text 38 translation. Thereafter, at the end of Kali Yuga, when there exists no topics on the subject of God, even at the residence of so-called saints and respectable gentlemen of the three higher castes, and when the power of government is transferred to the hands of ministers elected from the low-born Shudra class or those less than them. That's already happening. And when nothing is known of the techniques of sacrifice, even by word, at that time the Lord will appear as the supreme chastiser. Shasta Bhavishyati Kaler Bhagavan Yugante. Purport. I'm going to read the purport. There's some highlights. The highlights are symptoms of Kali, reversing the symptoms of Kali. By proper training and culture. Purport. The symptoms of the worst conditions of the material world at the last stage of this age called Kali Yuga are stated herein. The sum and substance of such conditions is godlessness. So under the heading of godliness, there's many nice things. And under the heading of godlessness, there's none of those nice things. It's very unpleasant condition. In the verse, Brahma is addressing the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. So amongst the Brahmanas, the so-called saints, and the higher castes of the social orders, generally known as Dvija Janas or the twice born, will be atheists. Godlessness. As such, all of them will practically forget even the holy name of the Lord and what to speak of his activities. The higher castes of society, namely the intelligent class of men, guiding the destinies of the social orders, the administrative class of men guiding the law and order of the society, and the productive class of men guiding the economic development of the society, must all be properly well-versed in knowledge of the Supreme Lord, knowing factually his name, quality, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, and personalities. The saints and the higher castes or orders of society are judged by their proportion of knowledge in the science of God, or tattva jnana, and not by any kind of birthright or bodily designations. So we'll stop on that point for a moment. The implicit understanding is if you know, you should do. So, but first you have to know. Because if you don't know, you're going to do something else. So tattva jnana. Often Prabhupada would use instead tattva vijnana. Mukta sangasya jayate. But in Kali Yuga, people don't even know what to speak of apply. So by what standard should intellectuals, administrators, and productive class be known? By their knowledge of tattva-jnana. For starters, that's not a complete picture. And as Kali Yuga progresses, less and less is the proportionate part of the population that knows. But still designations go on, whether it's as in the caste system, as in the birthright system, or just perform the functions because those are functions of society, the intellectual function, the administrative function, the productive function. As in many parts of the world where there's an absence or paucity of God consciousness. So the functions are still there, but they're atheistic. So Prabhupada wants to talk about the situations where it's designation only and when it's the real thing. So common is where such designations without any knowledge of the science of God and practical knowledge of devotional service are considered to be decorations of dead bodies. And when there's too much inflation of these decorated dead bodies in society, there develop so many anomalies in the progressive peaceful life of the human being. Governments of the world are busy with addressing problems and making laws and policies and trying to address the problems without ever being able to address the problems, because the root is missing. The root, addressing the root problem, the godlessness of society. Give a couple of examples. Global warming. Big issue, yes? Big issue. So many people concerned about it all over the world. Solution. Use less fossil fuel. Is that the solution? To global warming? First of all, they won't until it's gone. And they'll fight over whatever is there. That's for sure what will go on. Because the root isn't being addressed. And if they come up with some other alternative energy they'll exploit that and exploit that and exploit that until that's gone and fight over it until. Nuclear energy. Problem. Nuclear waste. Disposal of nuclear waste. And where do you put it? I suppose, you know, they'll figure something like, put it in a spaceship and send it out in space. Because what they're doing now is they're just putting it in the ground. And guess what? It's leaking into the water table. And you know what that means? I know a professor that deals with this. He was chairman of the robotics division, where they have robots that take the nuclear waste, stuff it inside capsules, seal the capsules, put the capsules in the truck. The truck takes them to some place, puts it in the ground, and they leak. So they meet with the government agencies to figure out what to do, and it's very clear to him, at least for the time being, to stop producing more of the problem until you fix the problem. They can't do that. There's too much invested. And besides, you know, with the people that are in the money chain, with producing and getting the money from that nuclear power. So now there's talk of doing the same thing in India. So the India is less dependent upon Middle East for getting, you know, but it's going to be the same problem. So what's the problem? The problem is greed. Whatever somebody has, they want more. And when they get more, they want more. And there's only a certain supply. So there's fight over the supply. But they don't want to address the real problem, is greed. People are not satisfied with this, they want that. That's because of godlessness. And, you know, go to the people who are concerned about global warming and say, the real problem is godlessness. You just need to have more kirtan. Right. Get out of here, kid. We want to spend money and find a real solution to this problem. Because of lack of training or culture in the upper section of the social orders, they are no more to be designated as Dvija Janas, or the twice-born. The significance of being twice-born has been explained in many places in these great literatures. And again, one is reminded herewith that birth, executed by the sex life of the father and mother, is called animal birth. But such animal birth and the progress of life on the animal principles of eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating, without, once again, scientific culture of spiritual life. So he's using training and culture and scientific culture of spiritual life. This culture of spiritual life is derived from the use of that word, which also finds its way into Nectar of Devotion in the introduction. In the introduction, those that know the Sanskrit of Upadesh Amrita, Anyabhilasha Tushunyam Jnana Karma Dinavartam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilana Bhakti Uttama. It's derived, or it's Prabhupada's simplification of Anushilana. Anushilana means literally, Anu means to follow, or following, and Shilana means behavior. So anushimana, following the behavior. Prabhupada has translated this as the cultivation or culture of following the footsteps of great souls. Anushimana, who do you follow? Krishna anushimana, those that know how to please Krishna. Cultivation at least. So, or a culture, the culture of those that live their life in that way. So he says, such animal birth, mother, father get together, child is born. Animal birth, and they live their life on the basis of eating, sleeping, fearing and mating, animal life, animal birth and animal life, without any scientific culture of spiritual life. Is called Shudra life, or to be more explicit, the uncultured life of lower class men. So, in Vedic times, there were such people. In Kali Yuga, that's all there is, or progressively, more and more. And so, what's the antidote? Lord Chaitanya very mercifully and courageously ventured into the age of Kali to provide that through chanting and the practices of devotion and those following Lord Chaitanya to similarly introduce chanting and the practices of devotion to provide scientific culture of spiritual life in the midst of the Kali Yuga degradation influence. Which is risky business. Prabhupada said it many times. Persons who live their life on that basis, they are treated not nicely. They're harassed or hurt or killed. He referred to Christ in that regard many times. And other times, not just in relation to Christ, just in relation to himself or anyone who propagates God consciousness. There's risk, personal risk. Because the persons who one is dealing with are uncultured life, uncultured persons in lower class of society. What to speak of how the governments might view such things. It is stated herein that the government power of society in the Kali Yuga will be passed over to uncultured, godless labor classes of men. And thus the Nrit-devas, or the ministers of the government, will be Vrishalas. That word is right in the verse, Vrishala, lower class Shudras, uncultured lower class men of society. So, not a pretty picture. Intellectuals are atheistic. Don't even know the name of God, what to speak of the activities of God, his qualities, but they're the intellectuals, and the government leaders are low-class people that get in position by popular votes and by money, because they got some money, they can run an election, they get elected, and then they ruled the people. No one can expect any peace and prosperity in a human society full of uncultured lower classes of people. The symptoms of such uncultured social animals is already in vogue, and it is the duty of the leaders of men to take note of it and try to reform the social order by introducing the principles of twice-born men trained in the science of God consciousness. This can be done by expanding the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. In the degraded condition of human society, the Lord incarnates as the Kalki avatar and kills the demoniac without mercy. Now, it just went from Lord Chaitanya to, you know, Kalki. Because Lord Chaitanya is a reformer, and Kalki is a chastiser. When Lord Chaitanya wanted to chastise Jagai Madhai by killing them for their offense to Lord Nityananda, Lord Nityananda checked him, held his arm, and said, "Not in this incarnation. You're to rescue these people and give them God consciousness. Give them love of God. That's what you're supposed to do. Don't do this. Don't kill them." But it's certainly chastisable behavior. Prabhupada, with his words, would chastise strongly, rebuke. When he would speak about this subject, he would become very angry. Because poor people, they're counting on their leaders to lead them. Of course, you can't just blame the leader. The people elect the leader. But the leader is supposed to know better. He shouldn't take the position if he doesn't know better. And the people follow the leader. Like this Pakistan thing, it's just so crazy. So the solution that the American government wants to see is just hold elections. Come on. What's that going to do? A whole democracy. What about training people? No solution. No solution. Crazy people running around. And some strong, crazy people get together and blow up things. It's crazy. Crazy. There's a initiated devotee that from the U.S. that joined the army, and he just held a Rath Yatra in Baghdad and distributed prasadam and books in Baghdad. And there was something, I think the report said there was something like 150 people in the procession, you know, like in the Kirtan procession. Not a long way to go in a place like that. But if leaders of society, anyway, Prabhupada wanted very clearly by his words here and by his actions to impress upon leaders the importance. And leaders certainly aren't taking much heed of spiritual value. In some places. But they're so compromised. So, spiritual culture, in the absence of Here's how Prabhupada would speak. In the absence of government, which is supposed to take up this task, we're taking up this task with whatever resources we have. And we can only do so much. But where there is this systematic training and instilling of the culture of devotion, then the quality of life changes. And if that quality of life changes, then it provides the opportunity for further quality of life to change by association of those quality persons, like the pyramid structure. And it really depends upon quality training. So you're very fortunate in getting such training. And then you have responsibility to share that training with others. That comes next. And that's a very grave responsibility. And it's not like somebody else will do it. But those that are fortunate and receive that training, it's their responsibility to train others. Very, very thoroughly, carefully. And that can make a big difference. At least it can make a big difference in the individuals whose lives are impacted. But by having such examples within society, it can dramatically affect society. Recently, I think it was in Hyderabad, someone was asking the question about having everybody become Krishna conscious. He said, how is it possible? The people are so demoniac. And my reply was, we don't have to have everybody become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada's indication was even if 5% of the population became Krishna conscious, the world could completely change. Of course, 5% of the world's population, that's a huge part of the population. I mean, it's a huge number of people. Just think of, you know, where you are. It's far from 5% of the population. And, you know, so that's even the number is, or the percentage is small, still the challenge is great. But life is filled with challenges. So pick your challenge, the Krishna conscious one or just dodging bullets. I'm wondering, you know, what's the next crazy thing that's going to happen? And being affected by it. When we have encounters with people that show an interest in Krishna consciousness, that interest should be encouraged. If not, like, super intensively, at least to some degree encouraged. I was going through security or whatever it is in Tirupati. And a, you know, nice South Indian woman dressed in an army uniform was saw me, you know, going through the thing, the security gate, and she smiled and said, "Oh, Indian dress." I looked at her. "Where are you from?" Said, you know, I could have given her a transcendental answer, but I said, "I'm from America." "Same place you're from the spiritual world. That's where we belong." Trying to get my way there. Back. But some innocent little exchange like that, like another that comes to mind is I was visiting in Columbus, Ohio, and I was checking in my luggage at a check-in counter, and the lady behind the check-in, she wasn't even looking at what she was doing. She was getting the bag tag ready and saying, what religion is this? I said, Hare Krishna. She said, is that Hinduism? And I said, something like that. And she said, everything that I've read about Hinduism, it makes so much sense to me. I said, really? You know, so I called the devotees over and said, you know, do we have a temple? She said, right here in Columbus? Yeah. Where? I said, right near the university. She said, oh. And so they gave her the address. And I followed up a month later and asked, did they invite this woman, go see her, invite her to come to the temple? No. Because they're too busy doing whatever they're doing. But such interest, someone expresses, shows some interest. There's some very, very special people. I'll share another anecdotal story. On the Champaign-Urbana University of Illinois campus, there's Pritrashava and Donna Kelly, the American couple, and they have a little center there, along with the devotees that you know. And they were having Harinam Sankirtan on the behind the student union building. They call it the quadrangle. Just like a grassy area with walkways and, you know, the hangout place for students. So they were chanting, and one student came along, an undergraduate student, young American fellow, and looked at them and said, "You Hare Krishna?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh." They didn't know what that meant. "Do you have a temple here?" And they said, "Yeah, we have a little center over near the campus." I said, "Oh." And a little further discussion, and it turns out he had never met a devotee. He had been chanting 16 rounds, and he had read the Srimad Bhagavatam 3 times without any devotee association. "I'm so happy." And they said, "Well, we're so happy." And he's continuing. It wasn't like, you know, flash and he disappeared. He's continuing. And he's a core person that's, because he's young and, you know, enthusiastic, he's bringing other young people to the center. And there are people like that out there. So we should be prepared to fan that little spark. Here's some literature, something. People are covered, but a little spark, it shows, and that's very important that we encourage. And then, I'll end with this. One morning walk, where Prabhupada spoke like this. Maybe you've heard this before, but Prabhupada was explaining what preaching is. He used this very same metaphor. He said, preaching is when you see a spark and you fan the spark and the spark becomes a flame. And that's preaching. And when the flame, by careful handling, becomes a big blaze, he said, that is very good preaching. That's what Prabhupada was doing. Finding little sparks and giving very personal attention, his personal association to those devotees that had that spark of Krishna consciousness. And then together the sparks would make a blaze, little flames would make a blaze. That is expert preaching. So at least we should learn the art of taking a spark and making the spark into a flame. Even if that flame later goes out, that will be to the person's eternal credit, whatever devotional service. Of course, there are things to be selective about. Crazy people. I met my share of crazy people here during this visit in India. Crazy people. Attracted to Krishna and crazy. So we have to be careful. But while being careful, we don't avoid fanning sparks and encouraging people. And when we find one that becomes a flame, to see about systematic training, Krishna consciousness, following the indications Prabhupada just gave. Okay, so any comments, discussion? Kalki avatar. I understood about 70% of what you said, but some of it you speak fast, so I didn't get it all. Can you do it again slower? Clearer?
If we face any problem.
If we face any problem.
The tendency is generally to adjust the material.
Yes, the tendency is to make material adjustments. That'll take care of the problem, right?
So, but becoming more and more devoted or changing your consciousness, that's...
Okay. Okay, got that.
How to come to that platform?
By doing it. I mean, this is a how-to question. Nasate vijite bhavo no bhavo vijite sataha. That's how you do it. Those things that are... You've understood the principle. Material adjustment doesn't provide a solution. So now what? You withdraw consciousness over there and you place consciousness in sat. And you cultivate. That's the culture. Or you cultivate sat. And you have so many nice training, teachings, ways, practices. It's not like, you know, somebody hasn't told you something. They're withholding vital information. So you cultivate like that and go progressively more deeply. So just take one of the things, chanting. Go more deeply into the holy name. Go more deeply into the holy name. You chant the holy name every morning. Go more deeply into the holy name. And talk about that with the other devotees, how to go more deeply into the holy name. How to, you know, encourage one another and think about, meditate upon, strive for being just packed up with the holy name when you're chanting, not, you know, the other kind or kinds of chanting. And so you cultivate. And with that, you know, the attraction for material adjustments for things changes. Just that subsides naturally because there's already some knowledge. But now you're acting on the other side. And it brings enlivenment, it brings detachment, it brings knowledge, it brings happiness. I was thinking about this situation where you're living. In one sense, it's really good because there's nothing interesting out there. Absolutely nothing. So you have each other, and each other's association. You have wonderful association. And so go more deeply in the spiritual side. You know, because this situation isn't going to be forever. While you have the situation, take you know, the teachings, the worship, the chanting, the culture of Krishna consciousness, and strive together to go more deeply. Because that's going to be an investment in your internal Krishna consciousness that you're going to have to rely upon some point later, that you're not going to have this association. I mean, you'll have relationships that somebody's over there and somebody's over there and you're over there. But now you're all together. So there's a how-to item. And think of ways, you know, as you think of ways, you'll find more excitement in the ways of Krishna consciousness. How can we imbibe the spirit of the messages that we're receiving more deeply? You ask that question and share your inspirations with one another, you know, the body system, and you'll find you're going more deeply into Krishna consciousness. And the foolishness and shallowness and pretense of people that are purporting that they're going to make solutions by material adjustments, it just becomes even more silly. Transparently cheating. In some cases, knowingly, in some cases, unknowingly. They genuinely think they're doing a good thing. Trying to have a better policy for the next guy, while ignoring the root of the problem. They have no training. What you learn here will be challenged later by the, you know, the cruel realities of illusion. Meaning people putting demands on you. You've got to perform like this, not like that, and backbiting and nasty, and you know, your realizations will be challenged later. Like during this visit, one man in Tirupati, Grihastha, at the end, questions, answers at the Bhagavatam class, and said, you know, what is one supposed to do when one's wife, you know, doesn't want to follow Krishna consciousness? And I forget it. The immediate answer I gave was, you know, welcome to reality. But the message that I gave was, really the problem is you didn't receive training before you were married and she didn't receive training before she was married. So now you have the problem of trying to figure out how to be in marriage without any training. Then you found out about Krishna consciousness, but you don't have the training how to lead your wife in Krishna consciousness. You don't have any training. Now I want a solution to the problem. So, my comment, reason for bringing that up is it doesn't get easier. It gets more complicated as life goes on. So best when it's not complicated that there's very careful training. And, you know, the question you're asking, the resources right literally in front of you. how to go more deeply? Through the association of devotees. And inspire one another. You get into that kind of a mood, and wow, you'll experience something different than just, you know. So we're not meant to just maintain. We're meant to go more deeply into the process of Krishna consciousness, each item by item. The offerings of devotion and the hearing of the message and the applying the message and chanting of the name. Anything else?
Feeling of responsibility should be a proper reflection.
Say it slower.
The feelings of responsibility.
Feelings of responsibility.
It should be proper action. It should not be.
Feelings of responsibility should be combined with action.
Action.
Yeah, okay.
So like as you were describing about hearing, chanting, how do we go about setting up the proper priorities?
Boundaries?
Priorities.
Priorities.
Yeah. So what do we look for while setting while.
Well, you have instructions, and that's where you first look for. What are your priorities? And if you have proper, let's say, a priority is offenseless chanting. Even if you do something else, it may have its direct bearing on offenseless chanting. So you feel you're energizing the offenseless chanting by doing this. So the priority is the offenseless chanting, although you may be giving energy over here. Your relationships with one another. I purposefully mentioned that, because that's a very important priority for your going more deeply in Krishna consciousness now and developing a sense of genuine, loving and trusting relationships amongst one and one another now, and that propensity or capacity or skill in the future. Loving relationships, it's a priority. Not just, you know, getting along with one another so we don't quarrel and do that kind of stuff, but genuine, deep, loving relationships, because it's cultivation. And that's a challenge because it's Kali Yuga, where we have a tendency to quarrel instead of see beyond the differences and see the Krishna consciousness within and deeply respect and appreciate the Krishna consciousness within. But that's for advancing in Krishna consciousness, that's a priority. You can see that one perhaps in relation to the chanting of the holy name, in that, you know, you don't make offenses against the devotees of the Lord. It's Namaparad number one on the list. So instead you go the other side. But the other side is, it's positive, it's not just negative. Avoid offenses. It's cultivate loving relationships with devotees. And these ones that, you know, they're really trustworthy. But your question was, how do I set priorities? You set priorities according to the instructions you receive. And those instructions you receive are situation specific, meaning in where you are on your spiritual path, where you are in your age and stage of life and ashram and all that. I guess you should say it because it's true, but you know, I don't need to say it because it's such a core part of your training, that proper relationship with your spiritual authorities is a super priority. Because when that's in proper order, then the other things that you hear can be, you know, you don't reprioritize based upon the mind. You live your life directed by spiritual intelligence that's received from the scriptures and spiritual teachers. But that too could be put in the category of loving relationships with devotees. And of a certain category, certain loving relationship, but other loving relationships are also. Lord Chaitanya placed those two items as priorities. Chanting the holy names of the Lord. Constantly, which means without offense, because you can't chant constantly, as long as the mentality of offense is there. And he said serving the devotees of the Lord, but that means, you know, loving relationships with the devotees of the Lord. Because you can serve one another, you have to do that because you live together. But there isn't necessarily a mood of loving exchange. So that's an important, very, two priorities. And then apply that principle of loving relationships with the devotees goes those more advanced, those that are peers, those less advanced, the Madhyama Adhikari program. Those are two very, because they're comprehensive, they're inclusive. From those two principles flow other principles. Your study, your regulation, your academic work, you know, it flows from those relationships, those two things, the holy name and the proper loving relationships. It's very interesting to just know somebody has a question even they haven't put their hand up. It's the face is the index to the mind. Go ahead.
When we interact with the people, there is zone of concern and zone of influence is there.
Yeah.
So where we can influence relatives, the workplace, wherever.
That's it. You know the answer to that. If you know this terminology, that it depends on how strong your Krishna consciousness is, how pure you are. Put it this way, supposing Srila Prabhupada was in your workplace, and you're in the workplace, who's going to have more influence? And what's the difference of that influence? It's purity. Purity is the force. So that influence is based upon purity. So what should we try for? To influence people or try for purity? Try for purity. When there's purity, then there'll be some increased, not only capacity, but also concern. Trying to influence people is cheap. Striving for purity is That's rich. And there are a lot of people running around trying to influence other people, and there are very few people trying to purify themselves, so, you know, in a very deep, sincere way. So that's where our attention should go. But not, you know, not be creeping us, we should distribute, have compassion in our hearts for others. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.